Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Giant trevallies. Usually they are solitary hunters, but about 50 of them have come here from neighbouring reefs, attracted by this abundance of potential prey. The fledglings stay out of the water if they can. They even drink on the wing. If the trevally are to catch one now, they have to up their game.
There you go. That's a clip from Blue Planet 2. It's on Sundays at 8 p.m. on BBC One. James joins us once again. How much longer can David Attenborough keep this up? Now, I assume he's not going to these places. He's kind of sitting in a voiceover booth.
You see him standing on the front of a yacht or some kind of sailing vessel at the beginning of this series. Mm. And I think we'll probably get a bit of footage of him down in some kind of submersible submarine type thing at some point. Mm. But other than that, I imagine he spends most of his time standing in a booth, speaking very nicely into a microphone. But I was kind of thinking about, you know, how much longer is he going to be around? And he has become, for people in this part of the world, so iconic as the voice of nature. He is the voice of Mother Nature, because he speaks, he has a sort of perfect speaking voice that is both posh but not too posh, and sort of comforting but also dramatic. He just has the perfect speaking voice for narrating this kind of thing. And I was kind of even surprised when I was looking into the history of Blue Planet, because I remember the first series coming out, that was in 2001, that he Sir David Attenborough didn't narrate the US version of it, that it was Pierce Brosnan who narrated that one, very oddly. You know, because you would think, why wouldn't they just keep him? Like, but anyway, so I don't know if Pierce...
Maybe he was too posh for
Americans. Maybe he
American.
Was too posh for Americans. Yeah. And they wanted a pseudo-Irish man instead. But yeah, as for... Look, I mean, what can I say about Blue Planet 2, right? Nothing. It's the kind of thing that has to be seen. And really, it's the kind of thing that has to be seen on the biggest television you have, in the highest definition that you have. Because it is an absolute masterclass of TV production and editing, particularly, because, you know, in the production process, it's 4 years in the making. I have it here. They have done 125 expeditions in 39 countries, made more than 6,000 hours of underwater dive footage, and out of an estimated 4,000 dives, they've now condensed that into, I think, 8 or 7 hours of TV.
Crikey.
Which is an incredible amount of work. And it's also a very, you know, there's a lot of post-production gone into this as well, because obviously when these scuba divers are, you know, swimming around manta rays who are igniting, you know, phosphorescent plankton, there is no microphones capturing any of the audio, and the Foley artists, or whatever they're called, the sound designers, I'm not quite sure, have edited in have edited in all of this, you know, sound to convey more meaning and drama and tension to the show. So really, it is like a perfect hour of escapist TV wonder production, and I think it is incredibly well made, and the BBC are the best in the world at this, you know.
Yeah,
no one can come close to this at all in terms of what they do. And I always think, you know, when you hear about like cutbacks at the BBC, that this is something that should be shown to everyone in the world, going like, this is what your TV license is paying for, look at this piece of incredible footage. The other thing that's a little bit depressing about this time round is that obviously, compared to even 16 years ago, well, you know, David Attenborough is going on about how the polar ice caps have melted by 40% since in the last 30 years, which is, you know, half of the time of the first series of Blue Planet. So this one comes with like a real cop yourself on, lads. You're kind of ruling the planet. A heavy leaning dose of, you know, wake up and look at this poor walrus mother with her calf nowhere to go, about to drown kind of thing. And that, it's a bit heavy handed at times, but I suppose it is a very important message.
Is it, you know, planet Earth underwater?
So I was wondering about this because I think fish and, I guess, under, you know, aquatic mammals, I'm not quite sure, are not as immediately cutesy or anthropomorphized as mammals are in planet Earth, because, you know, mammals have a more, not that they necessarily look human, but they have more sort of immediately recognizable human traits.
Yeah,
they have limbs, they have faces, they seem to have a more sort of nurturing relationship with their offspring than fish do.
Yeah.
So it's not as immediately warm, in basically parts where animals are in peril, when the fish are in peril, you maybe don't feel as much for them as you would for, like, you know, some poor lizard that's being chased by a million snakes kind of thing. What you get here is less heart, but probably more sort of curiosity, because as David Attenborough explains very early on, the seas are this, you know, incredibly vast region of the planet, and yet one of the most unexplored regions of the planet. So every kind of new fish species or whatever animal you're introduced to, some of them you will have heard of, but I would say three quarters of them you will have never even clapped eyes on before.
Yeah.
So there's a real sense of novelty to this. And then there's also a kind of otherworldly beauty to the whole thing. Like, it is kind of like an hour long, you know, really fancy screensaver on your computer. But it is, what is really good about it is how they understand kind of the meter of the story so well, because they don't spend too long on any one thing. They sort of zip along very nicely between all the different things very, very quickly. Like this opening episode, I think, was called Open Ocean or something like that. And it was, I mean, the theme of it was just the sea.
Yeah.
And it literally went from the tropics to the polar, you know, to the polar seas and so on and so forth. So it was very wide in its breadth, and it was very kind of just zipping along from one to another. So I found, you know, as hours of TV goes, it moves along very quickly.
Yeah. David Attenborough, according to Drew in Kilkenny, David Attenborough didn't narrate the US version of Blue Planet due to a contract dispute. Well, we don't know about that. Sean, really, BBC Four has brilliant programmes, including loads of foreign drama. Someone else says, BBC Four is quite magnificent. It's the only one worth watching. Give it a go. I'm not saying it was bad. I was just saying, is it online, or was it BBC Three that went online?
BBC Three went completely online.
Ah, right.
And
okay,
that's kind of
my
like
mistake.
Youth programming, in inverted commas. And then BBC Four is Nordic dramas and kind of arty documentaries about, you know, opera and stuff like that.
So it's hardly the equivalent to Channel 4 at this stage of the game. It's more a critique of Channel 4 than anything else. House of Cards, the almost around the time that the Kevin Spacey thing broke, suddenly it was the last series of House of Cards. Now, they were saying that was happening anyway, which kind of makes sense to me, because it was running out of gas anyhow.
I think it's been running out of gas since about the second season, to be honest with you. And I've complained about House of Cards plenty of times on this slot before, so I'm not just hopping on a like anti-Kevin Spacey bandwagon. But certainly what has happened is, since these allegations came out over the weekend, Netflix have been very prompt, I suppose, in gauging the public temperature, which is really all a big extension of this whole Harvey Weinstein thing, really. I mean, I would say this is. And they have now put the show on an indefinite hiatus. So they had announced that they were going to make it the last season.
Yeah.
And now it's I don't think it's cancelled, would not be my reading of it.
Okay.
But it's being put on a hiatus while they figure out how, I guess, to rapidly kill him off or get him out of his contract or something like that. And now there's sort of rumours of two potential spin-offs coming. One would be, as you would naturally expect, starring Robin Wright as Claire Underwood.
Yeah.
And then the other one is with Doug Stamper, who is the political fixer, slash not a good one either. So those are the two options. But I mean, this seems to be really bad for Kevin Spacey's career, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever about the legalities, just speaking of his career, it looks like he's not going to recover from this.
Is it clear whether they filmed all the episodes for the sixth season?
As far as I'm aware, so it was due to come out in February 2018. There's no word yet about whether or not this will cause a delay, but it definitely will cause a delay. When they shut down production, he wasn't on set. Whatever they were filming, he wasn't part of that production.
Mm.
So I'm not sure how far into it they are. No one really knows.
Yeah, of course they wouldn't say.
Yeah, they wouldn't say. So it's very intriguing because, you know, he was this big TV star. He was, you know, the Emmy Award, the TV Academy have taken away this award that they were going to give him, which was going to give him the Emmy for his EGOT, which is, you know, the coveted Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. I think he has all the rest of them. So this allegation, which I don't want to say in an uncouth way, you know, but that's what it is. It really has been the implosion of his career in the space of like 5 days, and what it means for Netflix with this landmark TV show that essentially launched Netflix as a global brand.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And I suppose many said relaunched his career.
He was in the shallows
for a little while. Now, I mean, guys won Oscars and stuff.
Yeah, true.
So, God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I wonder, would they consider bringing him? Because I remember once a producer of a TV soap once told me that TV soaps operate within a moral universe. So that, and this works on an unconscious level. But say if you have a character who has an affair,
right,
and then the people who watch the soap are going, I hate that guy. Later on, you'll give him a heart attack and they'll go, yeah, just what he deserved.
Maybe
they might, you know, consider that. Four weddings and a funeral to be turned into a TV show. How will that work?
Yeah, so this is very strange. This news does seem to break today. So it's going to be made by both Richard Curtis, who wrote and I think directed the movie, or not directed, but wrote it anyway, and Mindy Kaling, who people would know of The Mindy Project and the US version of The Office. And she's going to be starring in a new movie called A Wrinkle in Time with Oprah Winfrey and Reese Witherspoon. Very shortly. So she has pitched this to Hulu, the online network that we actually don't get in Ireland, but they are responsible for making The Handmaid's Tale and a few other shows that do surface on other kind of streaming platforms. And it's going to centre around a group, I assume in the US, of friends who meet each other at, you know, these five events, four weddings and a funeral. But it's going to be an anthology series, so it's going to change sort of every time to a different group of people, although there is sort of some suggestion that the main character will be constant, but all of the other people around him or her will be changing every single time. So that's all we have out of it so far, beyond the fact that it also involves a man named Matt Warburton, who is a producer who worked on The Simpsons when it was good, and then moved to Community, which is a very beloved cult sitcom that if people haven't seen, it's well worth seeking out. So that's all we know about it so far, but I just thought it was kind of odd one.
Yeah, very odd one. Right, okay, well, when we know more about that, we'll let you know. We'll take a break, though. In the meantime, two more shows to talk about after this.
We're living in roles as if we were still teenagers. Like, if I'm staying out late, I'll get a text from the parents just saying, where are you, what are you up to? And it's like, I'm not a teenager anymore. I don't need to account for, like, where I am. I'll be home at some stage, like, just relax.
Wow, and this is your childhood bedroom?
Yeah. Yes.
Where you grew up? My God, this is crowded. Have you gone to look at anything, or...?
Again, it's been a case of we've applied for viewings or whatever else, but you don't get an answer or, you know...
You're not coming here?
I don't think you're suitable, you know.
There you go. That's a clip from This Crowded House. It plays out on Tuesdays at 9:30 on RTE2, and you can catch up on the RTE player. Brendan Courtney, obviously we recognise that voice there. What's he doing?
I thought he was an odd choice for this, but I do think he's a very charming and likable broadcaster. So I don't begrudge him my work. But it's basically a four episode TV show in which he will go around and meet various people in their 20s and 30s who are still living in their family home, which is, you know, something like 400,000 people are in this same boat because of this housing crisis that is primarily striking Dublin. So it is a very Dublin-centric show, from what I can tell, at least definitely in the first episode anyway. And in this episode, he met two different groups. The people we heard in the clip there were two brothers who are sharing their childhood bedroom and literally sleeping in the bunk beds that they had grown up in this tiny two-bedroom cottage in Palmerston with their parents.
Mm.
And then the other...
And how old would these fellas be?
They were late 20s.
Okay. Yeah.
One, I think, was a bar, worked in a bar. The other one was a bike courier. And the other, then the other group was, or the other sort of featured family, we'll say, was in Clondalkin, I think. And it was a younger woman, maybe in her early 20s, living with her boyfriend in the family home, who wanted, while she was saving up for a deposit for a mortgage, to put a log cabin in the back garden and see if that was a feasible option. Because, you know, as a young couple, living in your parents' house is not the dream.
Yes, yes.
So I thought the show had a lot of heart to it, but also fundamentally a lot of problems, in the sense that this was, to me, it just pushed all of the kind of blame for being unable to find a house entirely onto the shoulders of these young people, in the sense that,
no.
In the sense that, you know, it's acknowledged that rents have gone up, there's this house crisis, there's a shortage of demand, there's a basic understanding of how economics works. But then they would sort of go and they'd meet a financial advisor who'd say to them, well, you know, get rid of that loan you have, or go ask for a raise or something like that. And I was sort of sitting there in my very nice apartment going, please never get kicked out ever.
Yeah.
Which is what I imagine everyone who's got a nice apartment is thinking the second they turn on a program like this. I just, to me, it felt like it didn't structurally address any of the real problems of the housing crisis. Now, I also understand that's not the remit of the show. I'm pretty sure there was a primetime episode about exactly the same thing. So that's a job. But what I found really depressing about this show was, you know, the two guys, spoiler, they eventually find a place to live.
Okay.
They find this house. But it is implied by Brendan Courtney that part of the reason that they were able to get this apartment, or it's actually a small cottage somewhere, is that the team on the show had a team of researchers, you know, online all the time on Daft or whatever, you know, searching for a place for them, helping them to find a place that they could even apply for. You know, compared to the ordinary person who does not have a team of researchers is left, you know, out in the street kind of thing.
Mm.
So, well, quote unquote. But to me, yeah, it was a very kind of like I enjoyed it as a TV show because I felt for all the people in it without really learning that much. I mean, what I learned was lower your expectations, earn more money, and then somehow you'll find a place to live.
Good news. Is that is the remit of the show to find a place for these people to live in?
I'm pretty sure the remit is to find a solution to their problem, all right? That isn't necessarily to find a new place. For example, the other group who wanted to put this log cabin out at the back, they were dissuaded from doing this and instead were encouraged to kind of pay back the kind of, basically that they would get the parents to build a granny flat onto the house instead, and that they would live in this granny flat and sort of pay off the cost of, you know, whatever topper up mortgage. I'm not quite sure, you know, I'm not au fait with these kind of terms because I'm nowhere near mortgage yet myself. So instead of putting in the log cabin, they would pay to, you know, to do up the house, and this would add value to the house and they'd still be able to save and so on and so forth. So yeah, that was a more practical solution, I would say, but definitely it's about finding some kind of solution to that specific person's problem, not the problem in general.
Right, okay. So the answer might be get the parents to move out, for instance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Though someone says, I think Brendan was picked for it because he has experience of having to move back home in his 30s.
Okay.
Or so I read, but you're right. I'm used to hearing Brendan talk about clothes or the Fair Deal scheme.
But I do think he's very nice.
No, he's nice.
I really like him as a broadcaster. I remember him back in the Wanderlust days, way back when RTE2 was Network 2, which was a great kind of travel dating show that it made. And he was really, really good on that. So I like Brendan Courtney.
A House of Cards focusing on Robin Wright's character Claire or Doug Stamper will be like watching paint dry. Painfully boring, says Dan in Cork. There is a danger of that.
Yeah.
There is a danger of that.
So
Sharon Horgan's Motherland coming back to BBC soon. Can't wait, says Anya in Mayo.
I watched a trailer for today. It completely bypassed me. So I really liked the trailer. I thought it looked very funny. It seems to be a sitcom about parenting and the real stresses of parenting and kind of a warts and all look at parenting. So,
okay.
Look good.
Okay, that sounds okay. And will you please thank TV on the Radio Man for his recommendation of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend last week. It is pure crap. with a load of cheesy scenes throughout. Everything about it I should hate, but I love it. Binged on the first season and just started the second. Just love the songs. So ironic and wacky, just brilliant.
Delicious.
So there you go. You're doing good work here. Our third show today is Big Mouth. All seasons, all episodes of season one streaming now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Am I a lucky guy or what? I've got this beautiful family, a gorgeous home, and I also love this woman. Not only did she prepare a fantastic meal and birth three beautiful children, no drugs.
Oh, please, Nick slipped right out of me.
Mom, Andrew's here.
He's family.
Okay, can we be excused?
Once you pay the snuggle tax, come here.
Come here.
Mom.
Ugh, I could eat you alive.
Mom, can you not do this in front of Andrew?
Oh, you smell like fresh buttered baby.
Give me a whiff.
Mom, okay, we're going up now. Goodbye.
Love you, Nicholas. Love you. And you too, Andrew.
Oh, ow. Sorry.
What a fantastic best friend. The kid's dynamite.
There you go. Mmm, fresh buttered baby. right. So it's animated?
It is, yeah. Which is a crowded market right now. You know, yeah. There's a lot of very good and strong animated comedies out there. Now, I will say, this has been out, I think, since the end of September, so there are probably a lot of people who've seen it. I'm a bit of an outlier. I do not like it as much as other people seem to have really taken to this, those that have at least taken the plunge. It's an animated comedy from Nick Kroll, who's an American comedian who, if you know who he is, you definitely know who he is, and if you don't,
You
might at some point, kind of thing. And it's about him, and well, it's loosely based on his adolescence. And it's about three sort of best friends, two guys and a girl in a junior high school in Brooklyn, coming to terms with puberty. And when I say coming to terms, I am not, you know, I'm not speaking lightly, because this is raunchy and filthy and goes everywhere. I mean, think back to your schoolboy days when you were etching things onto books that perhaps you shouldn't have. Well, those are flying around and 6 feet tall in this show. So,
okay,
it is in your face, right? And unashamedly
there's an image, right?
And unashamedly so.
Speaking of Kevin Spacey, yeah, sorry, go on.
So I will say, certainly the shock value humor for me is at times very funny. The rest of the jokes I thought were just okay. This is a real comedian's comedian show, right? So it stars Nick Kroll, John Mulaney. These are comedy names that, if you know who they are, again, you know who they are, kind of thing. Jason Mantzoukas, Jenny Slate, Fred Armisen, Maya Rudolph, Jordan Peele, who is of Key and Peele and directed Get Out. Then you have other, like, you have people cameoing like Paula Pell, Rob Hubel, Kristen Bell, Chelsea Peretti, Kristen Wiig, John Hamm.
Crikey.
It's really big names for American comedy, particularly the American comedy podcasting scene. What I will say going for it is it does actually take a very frank and quite like sex positive approach to puberty and parts of the body and so on and so forth. I just wish it was a bit more funny, to be honest with you. For me, I just wish the jokes were funnier. I think you get a very frank and interesting look at teenage girls in this that perhaps you haven't gotten elsewhere before, unless you watch Bob's Burgers, which actually does this better, I think, with its portrayal of teenage girls.
Marie says, I thought this was a kid's show. I let my 8 and 10 year old watch this. I almost vomited when I heard what was coming from the TV in the sitting room. To say I ran through walls to turn it off as an understatement. It is absolute filth, it says.
Well, considering the first episode is called Ejaculation.
I should have tipped you off there, Marie. Somebody else wants to know, when is The Affair coming back, and does anyone care?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. I'm sorry.
I must say, I just lost it with The Affair. It was shark jumping all over the place. Someone else says, Sharon Horgan is dreadful.
I am hit and miss on her. I find her, I really, really like, I do, you know, I like the Channel 4 stuff a lot. I'm not mad on Divorce, which was her HBO show with, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah.
I find her a bit hit and miss with her writing, but she also had a role in the third series of BoJack Horseman, so that won me back over to her.
Carl wants to know, can you ask, is there any TV channel showing Community? I only got to season one before it was removed from Netflix.
It might be on, if it's definitely gone from Netflix, that's a real shame, because I don't know. Look, here's where you should go. If you want to go, check your local library or go to the online catalogue, because libraries always have DVD box sets. So
right,
you can get
it,
you'll be able to order it from any library in Ireland. So that's my advice.
James, thanks so much for coming into us. James Dempsey there. We're going to take a break. After that, 100 years since the Balfour Declaration.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.